Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I am Judy Nathans.
And over here, I'm Robert Winters. How are you?
We're still here. Okay.
We're still here, and it's still March 21st, full day into spring.
Yes.
Which is pretty good. Now, last week, there was a roundtable city council meeting on Monday the 13th, specifically about to present some of the
findings,
the kind of executive summary type version of
the shorter version of report from the CTC technology and REBEL. I love that REBEL.
Right. So it was on the topic of municipal broadband, and there was some more stuff as part of the title, you know, proposals and ideas and what have you. Right.
There's some very technical stuff in there. CAPEX, APEC, whatever.
I was at a Porter Square meeting about this, people started using the word CAPEX, and I was going like, oh, please don't ask me the quiz question. What's a CAPEX?
Right.
Well, is that something you put on a guitar?
So you were asked to talk at that meeting. Porter Square Neighbors Group, right?
Yeah. So I mean, like, just a little background on this.
Yeah.
So the initial advocacy for municipal broadband, I tend to associate with people like Saul Tannenbaum.
Oh, sure. And Susan Fleischman. It was like at least 4 years ago, right? The broadband task force.
Right. But actually mentioning Susan Fleischman, you know, former executive director
of
Cambridge Community Television.
Yeah.
Let me just say this right up front. Okay. Is it to whatever degree, I mean, the revenues that support CCTV, in large part come from, in addition to donations and other sources, from revenues from cable TV franchise. Mm-hmm. And to whatever degree, like, for example, I get from Comcast a combination package of cable TV, internet access, and phone.
Yeah.
Well, my internet access and my phone service do not pay a dime to support CCTV. It's only the portion that's attributable to cable TV, of which a percentage of that then goes to support community access television.
Right.
Whatever degree you're moving away from cable TV toward internet-based everything, and that includes, I believe, help me out if I'm wrong here, but to whatever degree quote, cut the cable, but subscribe to various streaming options, which you can do, be the internet, then you're cutting off a revenue source for things like CCTV as well. Not that that should be the sole guiding.
No, of course not. And the city has been giving money to CCTV, which they well should, because I think they do a whole lot more than the cable TV office.
Right,
but that's another story. But I guess it's been less, you said, in the last.
Yeah, so the arrangement there is that because I don't know that the city can. City basically is a pass through device. Comcast gives to the city, then passes it to support CCTV.
Right. So they're not giving more than that, but they do contract for some services.
That's exactly the right way to say.
Is that where the money's coming from? Then?
Yeah. So there was various PSAs and things that the city puts out.
But also, they ask them to record certain things because I don't, you know.
Right. So now to whatever degree you start transitioning more away from cable TV revenue, I think the city needs to start to be a little bit more creative.
Public access. Right. They're going to have their own public access.
Yeah. And I hope that that's part of the conversation as moving forward with.
So far, I haven't seen that mentioned in anything.
Right.
I mean, in fact, go ahead.
Yeah. It'll be a long process, you know. So anyway, the idea is you know, what's the name of Upgrade Cambridge or something? Is the name
Upgrade
of it?
Upgrade Cambridge is
Is it Upgrade? I got it right. Wow, that's good.
Yeah, activist group that is kind of following from the broadband. Yeah.
Right. And most city council has basically got on board with this.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a political decision or whether it's a sincerely held belief, I don't know.
They want free internet access.
They
want it to be very cheap to everybody.
Right. But, you know, it's not so clear that that works at any level to do it that way. So this study came out. And again, I'm not, you know, it's funny, even though I was asked to be a panelist with the Porter Square Neighbors Association, I will say that Paul Toner was another panelist. Yes. You know, this is on this specific topic of municipal broadband. This was after the meeting last Monday.
Right.
In other words, fellow John Clenson, who is actually one of the early architects of a lot of components of what we think of as the internet today, back when his affiliations with MIT years and years ago. So, you know, you don't get more expert than that.
He knows what he's doing.
Right.
I wonder if he has cable TV.
Probably, I don't know. But I saw my role more as the somewhat ignorant.
Or the consumer.
I saw myself as I'm going to speak from the point of view of a person who just pays a bill to Comcast, probably, and I'm not particularly satisfied with what I get. What's the various alternatives that the city is proposing? What does this translate in terms of me personally?
Sure.
Will it cost me more? Will it cost me less? Will I get something for free? What will I get? Right. So one of my biggest questions is that to whatever degree I still watch some television, even though there may be, as Bruce Springsteen's once sang, there's 57 channels and there's nothing on. Now there are 457 channels and there's nothing on.
Well, that's for you because you don't stream other stuff. I mean, I get it all, but
but the streaming is actually that's internet stuff. I know that, but
I get Hulu, which is an app that I can get through, my TV. Anyway.
Right. So my question is, basic question was, okay, so if the city drops, total cost, they were estimating, and I think they're lowballing it at $194 million.
$194 million, and the city would put up $150 million. Those numbers are so confusing anyway.
Well, I always like to say that, you know, that sounds really great, but then when you realize that you actually have to dig a trench into a lot of people's houses in order because they
that's
have,
part of it. That is part of it,
you know, it's sort of like when they did the big dig in Boston. It's like once you actually start putting a shovel in the dirt,
it went
you
up
go,
another 20.
Yeah. No, yeah. Whatever, yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how fast things can jump, but be that as it may, so the city would then put up again, they would probably partner with some other entity.
Well, they presented four models, and if you look at the report I thought two and three were the preferable ones. I looked more thoroughly at the report, which is 165 pages and everyone can read it. It's two and four. So the fourth one is a private whatever. It's a P3. It's what a lot of cities do. I guess number three would be unusual because Cambridge is smaller, but number two, but basically you have to partner with someone. You can't just run it all on your own.
Right. And with that, then there would be some of the capital investment would come from the partner and some would come from tax revenue, just city support, right?
And other, right. I mean, there's the public monies versus private. It was all got into all of that. But I think the main thing is that you want to be careful of your risk. And I think the models that were less risky, but maybe not as much control, was number four. I don't know.
One of the analologies that I spoke of at the Porter Square Group, which is not related specifically to municipal broadband or cable or internet or anything like that, but it has to do with like the Cambridge Hospital. So once upon a time, Cambridge City Hospital was effectively within the umbrella of city government. You know, so if you work for the hospital, you work for the city, you are on the city payroll. Right. And to whatever degree the hospital industry itself just fundamentally had a lot of risk in it, you know, so you could suffer losses.
Sure.
In some years, you may have to become very much dependent on free care pool from, you know, from federal and state monies just to keep afloat. Yeah. This is sort of an anchor, you know, dragging down the city's own financial stability potentially. So they chose back 20 plus years ago when Tim Toomey was in the legislature to help shepherd the process through to create the Cambridge Health Alliance. And what he did is they essentially spun off Cambridge Hospital operations into an entity that was external to the city, but which much of the leadership was still appointed by the city.
So but they had some input, but not...
not an absolute day-to-day control, right?
And what kind of monies do they get from that?
So the city doesn't... It's not like the city pays just a relatively minor subsidy for public health commission purposes.
I see. Okay.
But basically the hospital network has to stand on its own, and it's operated very much. It's not like the city manager is making executive decisions whether to buy up another hospital to grow the network.
Well, that's good, because that's not their business either. I mean, and just like the city,
we don't do broadband necessarily. Well, that was the point of the analogy.
So
if the general trend in the last few decades has been for cities like Cambridge to spin off something that's basically best operated with some
people that know
semi-autonomy, even if there's a strong connection, I mean, that would be the way to go. So to whatever degree right now, you know, I as an individual just signed a contract with Comcast. No city's not involved in the least, right? So if in the future you know, the city were to deploy, you know, this pretty expensive, pretty serious thing. Maybe it's higher quality. I don't know.
Right, but it would be faster.
Presumably,
but they would need people like you and me to subscribe to make it viable.
Right. So they make reference to the take rate. I think was hearing the phrase was like what
40%,
percentage? Of,
yeah. Right.
Yeah. So what percentage of current customers or current residents would subscribe to this service?
And probably everybody under 35 that doesn't drive a car and is a vegetarian. No, I'm okay. That doesn't watch TV.
Right. We'll see. But so that becomes
one. They stream everything. Yeah.
One of the essential questions for me was: if I'm paying $200-something to Comcast now, and I said, okay, I'd like to give up my. Well, I found this out myself. I said I want to give up the phone service, and it turned out if I wanted to use this UMA device in order to phone service, I ended up, the net change in my bill was that I paid more.
Yeah. Well,
so I said, all right, let's not do that.
Robert, don't use yourself as an example.
No. But the thing is,
unlike other people, you do not have a cell phone. And if you did, you wouldn't even need the landline.
All right. So the phone, the phone is somewhat irrelevant in this discussion. But the question then is that if I said, okay, well, this is great. You know, the city's spinning out this really nice high speed. And it's symmetric, meaning you could upload as fast as download. Now, by the way, as was pointed out at our Porter Square meeting for by John Clinton, was that the average person in the city probably doesn't need that level of speed. And they certainly probably don't need that level of speed for uploads versus downloads. So fact that it's symmetric is probably completely meaningless to most people. But then again, we don't know how...
But small businesses, you see,
businesses might be different.
Could use that,
Yeah, that's right.
There should be levels of that, but you're right. But I think the main thing is that someone like me, I might still go with Xfinity because I watch the NCAA basketball, for instance. All the women's games are on ESPNU, ESPN2, whatever. I want to watch that, and I want to just turn on my TV and watch it. I'm going to have a separate thing if I want to do that. So,
I can
afford to pay a little more, you know, so I would do that. But I just think the average person, and we have time to, you know, hopefully before this all goes out, doesn't really realize that. They don't.
So these are some of the important questions I think that need to be asked.
Right.
And many of the people who were the advocates were, and I'm not saying this as a dig, but they're largely coming from a particular slice of the population, which is not necessarily typical of the person who's necessarily watching the basketball games. Well, the people with Upgrade Cambridge.
Oh, yeah. No, they're
They're people who are
streaming. They're doing that. They probably don't even watch a lot. They're busy creating good stuff. I don't know what they're doing. But
so I mean, if you were an employee of Google or a former systems manager at Tufts University, for example, you might have a perspective that is different than somebody who just wants to watch South Park, the new South Park that's coming on tomorrow night at 10 o'clock, like me. Okay, so there's my priorities,
But also,
I like to see Red Sox games. I'd like to watch South Park. I would love to see some old movies.
But the only reference in this whole report to anything to do with that, and they called video services, was this study, this random survey they did, which I question, which was sent out to 5,000 people around the city based on income, where they figured that was, it covered the city. And they got 602 responses back out of 5,000. And out of that, 66%, which is about 400 and something, said, we want a broadband system and we'd be willing, even if it required a tax subsidy. But when you look at this, it said they asked whether there is so many. They said this new ISP providing video and phone services is not a significant motivator for most respondents.
Right.
There you go. It's not at all important, 56%, slightly important, 13%, while another 70% said offering video and phone services is moderately important. So that's just, all right, so that's 30%, but that's just based on 402 responses.
Right, but I think the kinds of questions that will have to be asked will be much more, really basic questions like ones I'm suggesting. So like if I still want to watch TV and I still have to sign a contract with Comcast for cable television, even if I get my internet through the city, what will be the net change in terms of quality and cost?
Right.
You know, it's really simple questions like that.
I know.
None of these questions address that. They were very much sort of industry centric.
Well, I don't think they're at that level yet. And like I said, and I sent a letter, you know, to the council and whatever, and saying that the last I looked, like Concord Mass, which again owns their own power plant, which is very important. A lot of these cities that have done it own their own utility. You have to still contract with Xfinity.
Yeah.
To get tape. So I'm just saying there's a lot of things to work out.
Right. So I'm, you know, my attitude, it's exactly what I said to the Porter Square group. I said, go ahead, convince me. You know, I'm absolutely, I am absolutely eager to be convinced.
Right. Because you especially right are getting forward. A raw deal. I mean, I know we talked about your, you're not getting as much as I am.
No. And you know, and it's also, it's sort of easy to hate Comcast because they have made it pretty easy sometimes. And even if, in fact, at times I say I'm pretty satisfied with what I'm getting. But it's still, you know, my, you know, your natural reaction is to say, ah, screw them. Right. You know, but I don't know.
You do a lot of uploading stuff, right? In your work. Do you find, are you comfortable with the speed you get?
I think for the most part I am. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. It might be nicer if I didn't get the occasional little, you know, blurred speech because of some internet lag.
Right. Okay.
But for the most part, that doesn't happen that often. The only time I have to do any serious upload is when I take the recording of this program on a Tuesday night and upload it to YouTube. Right. Okay. You know, but other than that, I don't do it that much. When I'm in the summer school or actually next fall, there's good. Well, at least one of my courses I will do in Zoom. And I want to be, you know, to whatever degree I can have some rock solid guarantee that class is not going to be canceled because of an internet issue. I would, you know, I'm always looking for a more robust system just to make sure that sort of thing doesn't happen. But honestly, it hasn't happened.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think we've ever had an interruption in any of the classes I've taught ever since COVID kicked in. Yeah. So, you know, so I guess I have to say I'm reasonably satisfied, but I would love to have a little lower cost. But but so far, and again, please, everybody, convince me.
Okay, all right. So let's leave this. But there's the other thing. I sent this to you, and it said that they would have to pay $20 per month. They're willing to pay $20 per month for 10 years to a temporary fee to cover construction costs. That's something new. I didn't see that. Is that on top of what they paid for the, did you see, that's page 74. So people pay attention because I don't know what that meant.
You know, I assumed that was a sort of a sly way of saying, would you object to, you know, even something like your taxes being a little bit higher in order to pay
for
them.
Yeah, but that's a lot. $20 more, and then they're saying $70 would be sort of the base for most people.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, a lot
to look at. So let's go. Yeah.
Right. The bottom line for me basically is let's make sure that we really start asking some of the questions from a consumer point of view Am I going to get something better than what I have currently? Is it going to cost me more? Is it going to cost me less?
And people over 30. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
There's still some of us out there.
Right. All right. Now, one other thing I want to mention again. I want to speak just a little bit about some of the ongoing process about the city charter.
Oh, well, that's important because there's that special.
All right. So tomorrow there is a special meeting of the Cambridge City Council.
3 o'clock.
Right. Where the charter review committee is to present to the council. And I believe it's because it's part of the agenda materials that they are seeking in a 6 month extension.
That's
normally they would have to have a report to the council by June 30th of this year.
Right.
And And for a few eager beavers on the council who I think are really wanting to change the charter for whatever purposes, selfish or otherwise, yeah. I think they were kind of wanting to get something earlier so that they could propose changes to put on a municipal ballot this November.
That's so crazy. I think it is crazy,
but
it's just too soon.
Right, but the you know, but ultimately
too political.
It is highly political. Absolutely. So to whatever degree, so apparently they say they're going to seek an extension till this end of December of this year.
Right, and I'd be curious to see how the city.
So any ballot question would then have to roll over to the next election. So
or
they could hold a special election.
I think that's more likely because then you don't have all the politicking of the candidates going on, but you'd have
So anyway, I don't know what's going to come of that. Yeah. I mean, I may tune in or show up if I can show up, you know, hopefully not everything is in Zoom, but you know, it's a matter of some interest and I might as well say right now, that John Pitkin, myself, and we have basically the voices behind a lot of imagery. We're actually producing what I think will be a pretty good quality video on the history of the Cambridge Charter.
Yes.
From town until Plan E. So basically the 1846 charter, all the intervening years. It's actually a lot of good story in there, by the way. So this is not just cold stuff. It's a lot of good history.
Sure.
And we've dealt with people at the Cambridge, Alyssa Pacey up at the Cambridge Room and the Cambridge Public Library and Charlie Sullivan from the Historical Commission. Yeah. So we did a lot of background work on this. And I think people are going to like it. But, you know, 1846 charter, 1891 charter, 1915 charter, and the 1940 Plan E. We will do other episodes in the future on, you know, Plan E forward and others as well. But I hope this is be a good educational video just to give some of the background on, you know, how did we get to where we are today, that people will appreciate. Jim Browdy actually did some voiceovers as well with us. So, but I hope people will look forward to that. And I was going to mention that in conjunction with the fact that, you know, we were doing the last of our voiceovers today over at CCTV on the way back. We said, you know, we still need an image, a particular image from back in the 1840s. And we put in a request to the city for it, you know, and now we're just waiting. I said, well, you walking by City Hall? I said, yeah. Okay. Come on, come with me. We went in there. And I just want to, I wanted to say some very, very nice words about the city clerk's office. Uh-huh. All right. So, you know, our city clerk is Diane LeBlanc and Paula Crane has been in there, deputy city clerk, Lori Lopez, Nicole Irwin, and many other people in there who have been, today in particular, it was like a party. And then, you know, they said, well, what do you, Diane said, what do you need? And he said, I said, well, we'd like something like some birth and death records from like the 1840s. And she just turns to some staff, says, go down there and go get that. A few minutes later, they're up there with these original documents.
Wow.
And my patron saint is a one-time city clerk, Lucius Page, who wrote the History of Cambridge back in 1877 and is a real source book for a lot of what we were looking into. So they brought up documents signed by Lucius Page,
unbelievable
originals, and you know, so bless you, City Clerk's Office. Yeah. You were very kind to us, and I've also very much offered my services to help them in any of the more recent paths in there.
What are you hoping people will get? I mean, if it only goes up to what our current charter is, are you trying to show why we have the current charter?
Yeah, I think, right. And so this is not something that's drenched in opinion. There's none at all. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I mean, it's that, more from the point of view of a teacher teaching about local history.
Okay.
But one of the things that I felt was a deficiency in the way the Charter Review Committee was doing, and they make very clear, we are not an expert group. We are just a random group of citizens, you know, just basically offering impressions more than anything. Yeah. But I felt right at the beginning that they should have started off with a much more thorough understanding about how did we, you know, when we moved from town to city, when we moved from city to, you know, a different form, one with a stronger mayor form, mm-hmm. You know, when in 1915 we dispensed with the Board of Aldermen and went to an even stronger mayor. And then ultimately leading up to the reasons why you did all of these things, I want to really make that point a strong way that people didn't change charters just for the fun of it. know, they did it because it was a compelling need.
So you're saying that they haven't done that? They haven't done that deep dive in the beginning? I mean, you
there was a presentation from the Collins Center that did sort of like you might call it the 3-minute drill.
Okay.
Basically that did that. But, you know, a 3-minute drill that says, well, then they did this and then they did that doesn't actually provide context.
No, it doesn't go into what. No, you're right.
Yeah. So to whatever degree we had a mission here, it was to provide a little bit of context about how we came from a town of 12,000 people to a full-blown city, you know, with infrastructure needs and management and issues of political patronage over the years and all of the things that led up to how we got to where we are. It is quite honestly pretty remarkable that the current planning charter has persisted more or less unchanged for 80 years, you know, and people may say, well, it's time to change it, right? But, you know, that'll be, we'll get into that in another, we'll produce another program about that as well. But but anyway, I hope it's something that people will actually appreciate.
Well, I just, you know, watched the last one that they had just because I hadn't really watched any meetings. And frankly, I was a little disturbed by what I thought was some lack of knowledge of even other towns and forms of government, or that they just think mayor versus, I mean, I don't know. I wasn't very assured.
And again, I'm not trying to dig on them here really, but my real concern is that, you know, they're basically just tossing around impressions, and then a few select people, some perhaps affiliated with some city councilors, are sort of trying to sort of be the puppeteers who are trying to influence to get some recommendations that some city councilors might want as their outcome.
They shouldn't be involved. Frankly.
No, I really think this should have from the get-go been completely independent of all of that. But you know, that's not the hand we've got to end soon.
So there's no city council meeting next week, right?
I think that is right. But then we'll be back. But there is a special meeting tomorrow.
There's a lot of meetings this week. Okay.
So anyway, see you later on Cambridge Inside Out.
All right, bye-bye.